I want to start today's deep dive with a premise that honestly, it feels a little bit insulting.
Insulting to who?
Well, insulting to the people who spent, 4 years getting computer science degrees, because we've been told for decades that if you want to build software, and I'm talking real robust enterprise-grade software here, you need to learn the syntax. You need to dream in Python or Java. You need to understand algorithms that, frankly, look like alien hieroglyphics to the rest of us.
Yeah, that is definitely the gatekeeper's view, isn't it? Learn to code has been the mantra for, 20 years now? The implication is always that if you can't physically type the code, you can't build the tool.
Exactly. But we have a source today. It's a manifesto and guide simply titled Your Foundation. And it completely rejects that idea.
It really does.
It argues that the single hardest part of building enterprise software isn't the coding at all. Our mission today is to dig into its core claim, which is if you are a business leader, if you know how to run a company, delegate tasks, manage an org chart, you essentially already possess the exact skills needed to be a software architect.
It's a very provocative stance.
Yeah.
But when you actually dig into the text of this guide, it's incredibly validating. It basically says, stop looking at the keyboard and start looking at your organizational structure.
Which feels like a stretch at first glance. I mean, I know how to hire a marketing manager or, say, fire an underperforming salesperson, but that doesn't really help me debug a Python script. Or, well, I guess the guide says it does.
It does. It positions itself as a bridge for the non-technical builder. It promises to strip away all the jargon and show that software architecture is really just management.
And it's not just a metaphor. Right. That's what stood out to me.
Right. That is the key takeaway here. The guide argues that the specific mechanisms you use to keep a company from collapsing, things like role clarity, separation of duties, defined processes, are literally the exact same mechanisms that stop software from crashing.
So let's test that theory. Because usually when I hear the phrase software architecture, I immediately picture those impossible whiteboard diagrams, the ones with arrows pointing everywhere and acronyms I don't understand.
Oh yeah, the classic spaghetti architecture diagrams.
Exactly. But this guide starts with something so much more grounded. It compares a software code base to a receptionist and an accountant.
It's a classic business scenario, and it's perfect for understanding the why behind the code. Think about your own team, right? You have a receptionist at the front desk, and you have an accountant in the back office. You would never, under any circumstances, ask your receptionist to balance the yearly books in between answering phones.
Obviously not. That's a security risk, it's a competence mismatch, and frankly, it's just bad management. You'd be setting them up to fail.
Exactly. You separate those concerns. The receptionist handles the chaotic input, the phone calls, the angry customers walking in, the scheduling conflicts. Meanwhile, the accountant sits in a quiet room, focuses, and deals with the pure math.
Right.
And here's the crucial question the source poses. If the receptionist quits, or if you install a brand new phone system at the front desk, does the accountant have to relearn how to do math?
No. The accounting principles, the logic of the money, haven't changed just because the front desk phone changed.
That right there. That is the holy grail of software engineering. In the tech world, we call it separation of concerns. But as you just pointed out, it's just basic business logic. The guide notes that sales talking to the warehouse via order forms is identical to business logic talking to adapters via data shapes.
Okay, wait, hold on. You just threw a tech term at me. Data shapes.
Ah, yeah.
That pops up a lot in this text. Before we go any further, can we define that? Because to me, data is just, stuff in a spreadsheet.
Fair enough. Think of a data shape like a blank form on a clipboard. If you run a medical clinic, you have a patient intake form. It has a box for name, a box for date of birth, a box for symptoms.
Okay.
That empty form isn't the patient and it isn't the doctor. It's just the agreed upon shape of the information. In software, defining that shape is actually more important than writing the code that processes it.
So if I have clear forms, clear data shapes, my sales team knows exactly what to hand to the warehouse. There's no ambiguity.
Precisely. The warehouse doesn't need to talk to the customer. They just need the form. And that leads us to the central mental model of this entire guide. It moves away from the office analogy and takes us into a restaurant. It uses a restaurant analogy to explain how to actually organize files in a computer program.
I found this genuinely helpful because looking at a raw file directory is intimidating. You open it up and see folders named utils, lib, main, src. It just looks like a junk drawer. But this guide says, look at your software like a commercial kitchen.
Right. So visualize the folder structure of your software tool. The guide says you have a directory called core. In our analogy, core is the kitchen.
The kitchen. Okay, I'm with you.
The rules for the kitchen are incredibly strict. This is where the cooking happens. This is your pure business logic. And the number one rule of the kitchen is that the chef never talks to the customers.
Why? I mean, in some fancy restaurants, the chef comes out to say hi.
Sure, in a boutique, maybe. But in an enterprise, no. Customers are messy. Customers change their minds. Customers speak different languages. If your chef is out in the dining room trying to take orders and cook the steak at the same time, the steak burns.
That makes sense.
In software terms, the code inside Core Your Chef should never know about the website. It should never know about the mobile app. You shouldn't know if the user is clicking a button or typing a command line prompt.
It just cooks.
It just takes ingredients. The data applies heat, which is the logic, and puts a plate on the pass.
So if Core is the kitchen, what is the rest of the app doing?
Well, you have a directory called adapters. This is the front of house, the wait staff.
And their job is dealing with the mess.
Their job is exclusively dealing with the mess. They handle the HTTP requests, the file uploads, the user clicking the wrong button entirely. Their job is to take that chaotic input, clean it up, write it onto one of those order tickets, the data sheets we just talked about, and slide it into the kitchen.
I really like this because it explains why enterprise software is so fundamentally different from startup software. When you're a startup, you're basically a food truck. The guy cooking is also taking the money and driving the truck.
That is a perfect way to look at it. It's fast, but it's incredibly fragile. If the driver gets sick, the whole business closes. Enterprise means building a system where you can completely renovate the dining room, like change your website from a desktop site to a mobile app, and you don't have to change a single line of code in the kitchen.
The chef just keeps cooking the same burger.
Exactly. The chef keeps cooking the same burger, regardless of whether the customer is sitting in a Velvet booth or ordering from a drive-through window.
But here's the practical question that comes up. How do they actually talk to each other? If the chef is locked in the kitchen and the waiter is in the dining room, how do they coordinate without just screaming at each other?
That's the third piece of the puzzle. The file called contracts.pi.
Contracts.pi. This sounds like the order ticket itself.
It is. It's the binding agreement between the kitchen and the front of house. It basically says, I, the waiter, promise to provide an order ID and a table number, and I, the chef, promise to return a cooked burger.
And once that contract is written, neither side is allowed to break it.
Right. And this is where the architect mindset really comes in. As the business leader, you define that contract. You say, this is exactly how our departments communicate. You don't need to know how the burger is cooked. You just need to enforce the rule that orders must be written down clearly.
Which leads me to the part of the guide that actually made me laugh out loud. The orchestrator. Usually when you think of the boss file in a program like the main.py or app.py, you think it's the biggest, most complex file. It's the one doing everything.
Oh, yeah. We call that the God object in bad code. It's where one file knows everything and controls everything.
But this guide says the orchestrator must be the simplest file in the entire project. It practically demands that it be dumb.
Dumb is the highest compliment here. The guide introduces this three-line rule for the orchestrator. Conceptually, the boss file should only do three things. Line one, validate the input. Line two, compute the plan. Line three, format the output.
Is that literal? I mean, can you actually build complex software with a three-line boss?
It's a conceptual goal, but the guide pushes it to the absolute extreme to make a point. It even mentions a script called checkorchestratordumb.py. It's a literal tool you run against your own code. If your orchestrator file has an if statement or a loop, or is more than 60 lines long in total, the script fails. It violently rejects your code.
It physically stops you from making the boss smart. That sounds so counterintuitive. Don't you want a smart boss?
Think about your CEO analogy again. If you walk into a massive factory and you see the CEO down on the floor tightening bolts on the assembly line or rewriting the marketing copy for a brochure, is that a sign of a genius boss?
No, that's a bottleneck. That's massive micromanagement.
Exactly. That is a sign of a failing company. A CEO should be up in the office directing traffic. The CEO says, marketing, you handle the campaign. Engineering, you build the product. Logistics, you ship it out. The CEO does not write the ad copy.
So the orchestrator is just directing traffic.
Yes. The orchestrator file is the table of contents, not the chapter text. If you put business logic, if you put actual decisions inside the orchestrator, you've hidden them. Nobody can find them when things break.
So the orchestrator just says, hey, adapter, check this order. Okay, it's valid. Now, Core, do the math. Okay, done. Now, adapter, print the receipt.
It coordinates the experts without ever trying to be an expert itself. It's purely administrative. And that is a skill business leaders understand intuitively. You don't do the work, you ensure the work flows.
Okay, so we have the dumb boss, the messy waiters, and the reclusive chef. Let's talk about the chef de corps a little bit more. The source material gets a little heavy right here, talking about pure math and data shapes again. It gives an example of generating mailing labels to explain what logic really looks like.
This is a great example.
Yeah.
Because it sounds so boring, but it perfectly illustrates the difference between doing a task and architecting a solution.
So the task is, I have a list of names, and I need to print them on those sticky Avery address labels, the ones with 3 columns and 10 rows. I can't tell you how many hours I've wasted trying to get those to line up in Word.
We all have. Now, a junior coder, or just a bad architect, looks at that problem and says, okay, I need a library that creates PDFs. And they immediately start writing code that draws rectangles and sets font sizes.
They start painting the PDF.
Exactly. They're jumping straight to the output. But the guide says, stop. Don't think about the PDF at all. Think about the logic. What is the actual problem? The problem is assigning a grid coordinate to a list item.
It's a geometry problem, not a printing problem.
Even simpler than that. It's an arithmetic problem. Say you have the 14th name on the list. The sheet has 3 columns. How do you mathematically know where name number 14 goes?
I mean, honestly, I'd probably just count down the rows on my fingers.
And in code, you use integer division and modulo. It's literally fourth grade math. 14 divided by 3 is 4 with a remainder of 2. That means it goes in row 4, column 2.
Okay, I follow the math, but why does that matter for the architecture? Why is doing that better than just drawing the box?
Because that calculation, row 4, column 2, has nothing to do with pixels or inches or each key printers. It is pure data. The guide calls this a plan. The core logic doesn't output a PDF file. It outputs a plan, a list of coordinates.
And then you hand that plan to the adapter.
Yes. And the adapter turns it into a PDF. Or, and this is the magic part, it turns it into an HTML table for a website. Or it turns it into coordinates for a robot arm to stick a physical label on a cardboard box.
I see. By separating the math of where from the act of printing, you've made the tool infinitely more flexible.
And you've made it testable.
Yeah.
Which is the big one.
Right, testing. The guide calls this the sandwich pattern.
I warned you there were a lot of food metaphors in this source. But this visual is really crucial.
Walk me through the sandwich.
Visualize the data flow. The top bread is your plumbing. That's your adapter reading the input, like parsing the CSV file of names.
Okay.
Then the filling is your decisions. That's your core, the division and modulo math we just did. And then the bottom bread is more plumbing. That's your adapter rendering the output, making the PDF.
And the rule is, don't mix the ingredients.
The rule is, the filling never touches the real world. The logic never sees a file system, it never sees a database, it never sees a user. It only sees those blank forms we talked about.
Why is this such a big deal for testing, though? Because as a business person, testing usually just means paying QA people to click buttons for a week until something breaks.
And that's exactly why it matters. Testing the real world is incredibly slow and expensive. To test a PDF generator normally, your computer has to create a file, save it to the hard drive, open it, and then you have to literally look at it to see if the label's in the right spot.
Mm-hmm.
That takes, say, 2 seconds.
2 seconds doesn't sound like much.
It doesn't, until you have 5,000 test cases.
Mm-hmm.
Then that's 3 hours. Every single time you change a line of code, you wait 3 hours to see if it works. But with the sandwich pattern, you don't test the PDF. You just test the filling. You set in the number 14, and you mathematically assert that the output is row 4, column 2, that runs in a millionth of a second.
So you can prove the logic works without ever turning on the printer.
You can mathematically prove your business logic is correct in milliseconds. You strip away all the slow, flaky parts of the real world and just test the brain. That is how you move fast without breaking things.
This feels like the part where we all high five and say we solve software forever. It sounds perfect. But the guide takes a sharp turn in part 5. It introduces a new problem. It says, this architecture builds a perfect brick, but an enterprise system is a wall.
Yeah, this is the reality check. Everything we just discussed, the kitchen, the sandwich, the dumb boss that helps you build one tool, a label generator, a quote calculator, an invoice maker, those are bricks.
But a business isn't just one tool, it's all of them connected.
And that is where the N squared problem comes in. If you have 5 perfect tools and they all need to talk to each other, you have about 25 connection points. If you have 10 tools, you have 100 connections.
It scales exponentially.
It's a total mess. If your, quote, calculator needs to talk to the inventory manager, and the inventory manager needs to talk to the invoice maker, Suddenly, you have this massive web of glue code. We call it mortar.
And if the mortar is sloppy, the wall falls down, even if the bricks are perfectly fired.
It's exactly. Most enterprise software disasters aren't because the individual functions are broken. It's because the connections between them are tangled. It's the spaghetti code returning at a higher level.
So what is the solution? The guides seem to pivot here toward artificial intelligence, which, frankly, I was waiting for. Everyone is talking about AI replacing coders right now.
But the guide flips that narrative, too. It calls AI the Mason.
The Mason. Explain that.
Think about what large language models like ChatGPT or Claude are actually good at right now. If you ask them to write a Python function to calculate Avery label coordinates, what happens?
They do it perfectly. In seconds.
Right. They are incredible at generating the filling. They are amazing at making bricks. They can write the small, isolated logic functions faster and better than most humans.
Yeah.
But they are terrible architects. If you go to ChatGPT and say, build me an enterprise inventory system, it will not build a sandwich. It will build a monolith.
It'll mix the bread and the filling.
Oh, it will put the database queries inside the HTML templates. It'll put the business logic into the button clicks. It will create a giant, fragile ball of code that hardens into concrete. And the moment you want to change something, the whole thing cracks.
Because the AI doesn't understand the business boundary. It doesn't know that the receptionist shouldn't do accounting. It just knows that both involve numbers.
Exactly. AI is a tool for implementation, not design. And this brings us right back to the role of the business leader.
The architect.
If you, the human, can provide the blueprint. If you can say, I need a dumb orchestrator here, I need an adapter here, and here is the data shape for the contract, the AI can fill in the code instantly.
So the workflow of the future isn't a human writing code. It's a human drawing the boxes and the AI filling the boxes.
That's it. You become the general contractor. The AI is the subcontractor laying the bricks, but you have to hold the blueprint. You have to understand the sandwich pattern so you can stop the AI from making a mess.
That's remarkably empowering, because I've been worried that my lack of coding syntax knowledge made me obsolete. But this suggests that my ability to think in systems, to define roles and boundaries, is actually the only skill that truly matters.
The syntax is becoming a commodity. The cost of writing a function is dropping to zero. But the value of a clean architecture, the value of knowing where to put that function, is skyrocketing.
It's like the guide says, school teaches memorization, but business teaches adjustment.
That's my favorite line in the whole thing.
Yeah.
Software architecture is purely about building for adjustment. It's about admitting that you don't know what the future holds. You don't know if you'll switch from AWS to Azure. You don't know if you'll switch from web to mobile. So you build a structure, a kitchen and a dining room that allows you to swap out the furniture without tearing down the house.
And if you've run a team, if you've managed a project, you already have the mental muscles to do that. You just need to stop being intimidated by the .py file extension and start treating it like a direct report.
Treat the code like an employee. Give it a clear job description.
Yeah.
Don't let it multitask. And fire it if it tries to do someone else's job.
Simple as that.
Simple as that.
Before we wrap up, I want to leave you, the listener, with a thought that struck me while reading this. It wasn't explicitly in the guide, but it feels like the natural conclusion. If AI is the bricklayer and we are the architects, and if the code is just mortar filling in the gaps, are we moving toward a future where programming languages disappear entirely?
What do you mean by disappear?
Well, right now we write text, def function name brackets, colon. But if the architecture is just boundaries and data shapes, maybe the next programming language isn't code at all. Maybe it's just an org chart. Maybe we'll just draw the kitchen box and the waiter box, draw a line between them, and the AI will just make it happen under the hood.
That is a fascinating thought. It suggests that coding eventually just becomes diagramming. The structure itself becomes the code.
We're not there yet, obviously. But if you look at the sandwich pattern, it's certainly pointing that way. The text is becoming secondary to the structure.
And the structure is just business logic. So if you know business, you know the future of code.
Thanks for diving in with us. Go look at your code, find your receptionist, find your accountant, and for heaven's sake, keep them in separate rooms. We'll see you next time.